Dream big and save big on your next backyard project at Menards. Whether you're shopping for edgers, pavers, or wall blocks, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Build a beautiful border for your landscape with our Crescent Edgers on sale now through April 12th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Donald Trump was indicted 375 times, right, when he left office. He was literally sitting in a courtroom in with the prospect of real felony conviction. He got some felony convictions. And he turned that into a political plus for his brand among the people who were open to him. It was pretty amazing to watch. Hey, Matt, it's good to be back with you on Trailblaze.
Hello, Jamal.
All right. So we've had a big week in politics this week. Obviously, we're focused on the 2028 campaign, the only podcast focused on 2028. So if you want to follow us, please keep doing that on wherever you get your podcast and YouTube. The big news out of this week we should talk about are the MAGA millions. I want to talk about the MAGA money. There have been a couple of good, big stories about how much money that's being raised by Trump and his affiliates, and then how much money the Democrats are raising, and the big disparity between the two, and whether or not that matters, one in the midterms, which of course we know that's coming up, but how does that play out in the presidential campaign?
Well, it definitely matters, especially in the midterms. It's not great news for the Democrats. It would be much better to have more money than not have money. I think for this year, as looking at that article, at least when let's talk about like the DNC and the RNC first, and then we can kind of talk about the MAGA money next.
Yeah.
It is not horrible news for the Democrats in that the way that I read the article and kind of where
that's so positive. It's not horrible.
It's a podcast about hope, Jamal.
Is it about hope?
It's always better to have
or is it about
money.
Fear? is it about hope or about fear?
It's about hope. We're thinking about 28. Okay. Hope when Trump is gone. Look, it is always better to have more money than less money. That is absolutely positively the case. I am not trying to spin the Democrats way out of the fundraising deficit. But it looks from that article that this is a cash on hand problem, not a cash flow problem. And that's pretty significant. It'd be better to have a big pot of money that you can spend later on in the year. But the fact is that the Democrats appear to be increasing infrastructure spending all across the country. So that is money going to state parties to get ready to build the infrastructure for the midterm elections. That will also have an impact and will help in 2028. So that money is exactly what the DNC should be spending money on, and it sounds like it is what they're spending on. Everything that comes in goes out. So
yeah,
that's
when you say infrastructure, just explain to people, what do you mean by infrastructure? I mean, people keep talking about this, but spending money on infrastructure. Yep. What does that mean in real life?
So they're talking about building the state party apparatus. So that is making sure that there is a really good operative as the executive director of every one of these states. If they have a coordinated campaign, you've got a great coordinated campaign director. You've got great press and messaging folks. The more money these states have invested in, the better people that they can bring on, the more talented. And this is incredibly crucial right now. And it's exactly what they should be doing. The other good piece of news is it certainly feels in this election, the midterms are going to be sort of a momentum election. There is a ton of anti-Trump energy out there. And I think the Democrats have won every significant special election except for like one special in Tennessee over the course of the last year. So there's going to be a ton of energy. And so the money is not going to have as much of an impact. And, you know, if they are building infrastructure, that infrastructure harnesses that energy. And that's where the Democrats should be spending their money. So that's why it's not horrible news.
Okay. So the number I saw was that Trump and his affiliated PACs have raised about $375 million. That the RNC has about $100 million more than the DNC because you know why? The DNC is in debt. But this is not the first time this has happened. In 2018, the RNC had about $38 million. The DNC was about $500,000 in debt. The reason the DNC is in debt, according to the facts that I've gotten, is because the DNC took out about a $15 million loan last year to try to win those governor's races. So it worked. I mean, they put money on the ground. It helped. And the Democrats won New Jersey and Virginia because of that.
Yeah, and we'll be in a better position in 2028 holding the governor's mansions in both of those states. So it was money well spent. The DNC does this quite often. They usually borrow for elections just to make sure that they've got enough money to put in for media and message right before the election happens. You don't need that money on December 1, but you really right. need it on October 1 and November 1. So they did the right things. They made the right choices. They've got to pay that money back. And it looks like they're in debt, but that's okay. So we've got months to be able to raise money back for the DNC to be able to get ready for the 28 elections.
Okay. So let me give you a couple more data points that I think might help people who are thinking about this. You talked about money being well spent. Let's talk about money not being that well spent, which was the 2024 presidential campaign, where everybody was mad because Kamala Harris and Joe Biden raised about $1.1 billion in that campaign. In the official accounts, they also raised, according to Open Secrets, they raised about $842 million in outside money. And then in the Trump campaign, though, so here's the thing. So, all right, so that's 842 plus 1.1, basically about $2
billion.
About $2 billion. The Trump campaign only raised $464 million in their official account and about $989 million in their unofficial account. So let's just round it up and say $1.5 billion, right?
Yep.
So $2 billion versus $1.5 billion, obviously Trump won. That tells you right there, money alone does not decide who is going to win a presidential campaign.
I think that's certainly true. And I think if you look back in 2016, and I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure the Hillary campaign and associated entities greatly outspent Trump in that election as well. And obviously, look, people are always going to be upset when, no matter how much money you spend, when you lose an election, there are going to be people that are angry about it. There are people that have donated money that feel like their money was wasted. And that's just kind of the nature of the game that we're playing here. So,
and let me tell you, I talked to a donor a week or so ago who told me that they've been giving money to some individual candidates they liked, but they have not written another check to the DNC since the election loss in 2024. And they're a big DNC donor, big DNC bundler. They're not alone. I think the DNC is seeing a lot of people say that. So I asked this person, why is it that you haven't written the check? And the response was, because I haven't seen anything new and different. They want something new out of the Democrats, something new out of the Democratic National Committee, and they have yet to be told how we're going to do something different versus, hey, let's just keep doing the same thing we've been doing, just with more money. People don't like that.
No, I can understand that, and I can understand the frustration. But let's also do a little bit of kind of parsing of kind of what people are looking for here, right? There's one thing to have a new idea and new ideas and different ways of doing things coming out of the Democratic Party, writ large. Right. So not just the building at 430 South Capitol Street, the DNC itself has a very specific set of tasks that it's supposed to do. So we need to nominate somebody. We need to hold a convention. We need to put the rules together for figuring out who our nominee for president is going to be. In this year, they're going to fund state parties. They're going to fund infrastructure. They're going to make sure that we have these there's a set of six things. They're going to do a bunch of opposition research and dump that out. And that's what the DNC does really, really well. So it's not really an institution that's going to be coming up with all of these brand new ideas and new ways to campaign. They had a choice. I will say this. Last year, when there was a chairs race, they did have a chance to go with a guy named Ben Wickler, who is a little bit younger than Ken Martin, the guy that won. He had a lot of new ideas, was going to try a lot of new stuff in fundraising. It would have been a very interesting turn for the DNC to do. I think he would have done a great job. But that is ultimately not what the committee decided to do. They went with Ken Martin, who was a longtime state chair. He was a very good state chair. And I think that was a decision. We are going to do the things the DNC needs to do and hopefully do them very, very well. Basically, focus on blocking and tackling and do those things really, really well. And to that extent, I do think donors should be giving to the DNC to make sure that stuff gets done and gets done well.
All right. So I should tell people, we didn't do this in the beginning. I should tell people who may not remember from our beginning episodes, Matt, you were the chief of staff of the DNC. You helped run two Democratic conventions, and you ran an outside group that did a lot of money and research and all that for Democratic candidates. So you know what you're talking about when you talk about infrastructure and the Democratic Party.
For sure. Well, so I was the chief of staff for the Democratic convention in 2016. Convention. I was never the chief of staff at the DNC, but I have been at the DNC three or four different occasions over the course of my career. Yeah. So I have had a lot of experience with that building and the way that building works. So,
Yeah. So, all right. So people know, I think, money, the MAGA Millions, they matter, but they may not be the thing that matters the most. Real people power also matters, and who people and the candidates matter, and who people want to support, that, that matters a lot.
So, yeah. And the other thing, and just like one last 7 second thing is it looks like in individual races that are going to be contested between Republicans and Democrats, Democrats are generally ahead in kind of head-to-head fundraising against their kind of single named opponent. And that kind of makes sense because the Democratic Party is a little bit kind of leaderless right now while we await a nominee. So.
All right. So thinking about people who matter and candidates and messengers, there's one candidate, I think a deep dive every week or two about one particular person who's on our possible list for 2028 is important to keep going. So there's one person who's a possible for 2028. Everybody's been talking about him. He's very magnetic kind of candidate and politician is Wes Moore, the governor of Maryland. And one of the things that came up this week is that Wes Moore is getting a redistricting plan pushed through the Maryland legislature that will try to get the Maryland congressional delegation going from 7 Democrats with 1 Republican to 8 Democrats and 0 Republicans in opposition to what the Trump people are doing in Texas and other states to try to get those congressional delegations to flip to hold on to congressional seats. Now, again, we're talking about 2028, not 2026. But the reason why that matters is because there's some doubt that even though Wes Moore got this through the state house, he may not be able to get it through the state Senate. Senate Majority Leader Bill Ferguson, they've got a 34 Democrat, 13 Republican state Senate. So it's a supermajority. But Maryland Senate Majority Leader Bill Ferguson has said that he is not so sure this is the right thing for Maryland to do, that it may put some seats in jeopardy. And if that happens, that means that Wes Moore may not get this redistricting plan through.
Yeah, and that would not be great for Wes Moore. I mean, this would be a very public win for him if he were able to get it through. It will be a less public loss if it doesn't happen. I mean, this is certainly not going to be fatal to his chances to win the nomination. But we got to remember what this time is, right? This is the year before people are really paying attention and the race officially begins. And so it's a time to be building. It is a time to be collecting victories. And if Governor Moore is able to get this through, he will be able to talk about it in speeches. He will put it in a stump speech. He'll be able to talk to donors about it. He'll be able to create social media content with it. The greatest situation in the world was the Democrats win the House by just a couple of seats, and he can say in an advertisement during the primary, look, we redistricted Maryland at my direction, and we picked up this seat because of that, and we have the House partially because of me. That's like the absolute perfect scenario. If he does not get this through, he doesn't get to have any of those benefits. So that's going to be that could be tough for him. So he needs to be able to collect this win if he can.
Yeah, that's the best case scenario. The worst case scenario for my friend Wes Moore is that if the Democrats lose the House by one seat and he didn't get this done, let me just tell you something. The finger pointing, the shit talking, this will not be fun for the governor of Maryland.
Yeah, but do you point the finger at Wes Moore? Do you point the finger at Bill Ferguson in this case?
Oh, like, we're Democrats. We're going to
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. We're done. We're Democrats. We're going to blame Wes Moore.
Yeah, so, eat our own. Part of what's the contrast here for Moore is that because Gavin Newsom was able to push through a constitutional amendment in California, which maybe even was a bigger lift because he had to go to the general public to get it done. And they were able to do that in order to have redistricting if the Texas redistricting happens. They'll do that in California. But I will say this, a governor not being able to get his legislative packages through their democratically controlled, legislature is not the first time this has ever happened. Gavin Newsom has had this happen a few times out in California. One of them was a windfall profits bill he tried to do in 2023 for the oil companies, an energy bill package in 2024. So a couple of times Gavin Newsom tried to get some big pieces of legislation through a Democratic House and Senate in California. It didn't work. So it won't be the first time, but this is a high profile time for those people who are trying to see who's got the mojo, Moore or Gavin.
Yeah, and it's also a big time for Moore, who's a younger candidate than Newsom is. He hasn't been in office as long as Gavin Newsom has. He's running a smaller state, and so he's really going to have to up his profile. So it's not a perfect thing for that, but you know what? Look, we'll learn a lot if he is not able to get this through. How is he going to handle that? I mean, politicians make mistakes; they screw things up all the time. So it will actually be, if it's a big learning experience for him, if he grows from it, I mean, he could be perfectly fine on the other side of this.
This is a really important thing that you're saying right now. What happens all the time in politics is people make mistakes. Things come from out of nowhere. Those of us, who are, it's a constant crisis. But the question is, how do you handle it? This is a great point, Matt. How do you handle the problems when they emerge? And that's what separates the really good politicians from the okay politicians, are the ones who are able to take a blow, either figure out how to minimize it. And some of them, the really great ones, are sometimes figuring out how to make it a plus.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say what you want to say about Donald Trump. Donald Trump was indicted 375 times, right, when he left office. He was literally sitting in a courtroom in with a prospect of real felony conviction. He got some felony convictions. And he turned that into a political plus for his brand among the people who were open to him. It was pretty amazing to watch.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you can turn a mugshot into a campaign poster and then actually sell that poster and make money for your campaign, I mean, that is really, I mean, he is, Donald Trump is, he is something else. I don't know that other folks can do exactly what he can do, but yeah, so more hopefully can take this and learn from it and come back even stronger. And that's not to say, look, he may still find a way to get this done, and then we should give him credit for that.
Absolutely. Okay. Last thing before we go. I call this right on, right off. Let's call this segment right on, right off. We've got every person running for president seems like they are coming up with their memoir. This is not a new thing. People have been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
Coming up with the memoirs. Kamala Harris was first. She wrote that 107 days book about her presidential campaign and what really had happened. She had to get that out there. We've now seen Gavin Newsom's got one out called Young Man in a Hurry. Governor Shapiro, Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, has got one out called Where We Keep the Light. It's a little bit more about his personal life and his faith. And the Washington Post calls it a Mr. Fix-It narrative. So Gavin Shapiro. And then just this week, we've got Cory Booker out with one called Stand. And this is about his epic
filibuster.
Yeah. Thank you. His epic filibuster in the Senate. And then we also found out this week, Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, who people aren't thinking is running, but she just lost a Substack, not a book. She lost a Substack, which frankly may be a little bit more modern than the book. Substack called The Way Forward. So a lot of these people who are thinking about running are also writing.
Yeah, I mean that's what you do in this out year, right? Like before the official race starts. I mean, this is, going back to kind of my first presidential, John Kerry wrote a book, Wes Clark wrote a book, John Edwards wrote a book, Dennis Kucinich wrote a book, Al Sharpton wrote a book, all, leading up to the 2004 election. Same thing happened in 2008. Remember The Audacity of Hope came out in 2006, and that sort of launched Obama's campaign. Biden wrote a book that year, Chris Dodd wrote a book. I mean, this is what you do. I mean, I think what's interesting is that we have not seen a book from AOC. Mm-hmm. We've not seen a book from J.B. Pritzker, and then they should put yet behind both of those things because they may be on their way.
And Andy Beshear, Rahm Emanuel, right? We haven't seen books from any of these.
Yeah, although I will say Rahm's been around a lot. Like Rahm has been getting a lot of press over the last couple of weeks, doing a lot of interviews. So, but look, writing a book is a great way to get out there in this year where you don't want to look like you're running. You can do a book tour. You can speak on all kinds of topics. You can go on different television programs, and you're just promoting your book. At the same time, you're promoting yourself. I mean, Kamala Harris, Vice President Harris, is going to be in Columbia, South Carolina this week promoting her book from 4 or 5 months ago. So there are a lot of bookstores in this country that you could go to. It just so happens she happens to be going to Columbia, South Carolina, which could be one of the earliest states in the 2028 nominating process.
Someone said, is she still on that book tour?
Exactly.
It's still happening. And it's in South Carolina. One of the things that's important about a book that people can do, one of the reasons you write it, is because a lot of these politicians have things in their past that need to explain. And they don't lend well to a 30-second ad or just a response in a TV interview. So it gives you a chance to kind of lay all that stuff out for everybody and explain in full context from your perspective why it is it happened. I think Gavin Newsom's book is being regarded as that. He's putting out a lot of stuff about some of his personal things that people have talked about from his life. So he's laying a lot of that stuff out. And the question that then... the reason people do that is because when you get the question later, it's also very easy to just refer people back to the book, and then makes reporters have to do the work instead of you, the candidate or the candidate's press secretary, one of those of us who've done that job, having to be the ones that have to explain this every time someone asks a question about some scandal that happened in your person's past.
Yeah. I mean, in the modern campaign environment, if you have done anything that is even remotely questionable, or even if you haven't, like, it's coming out. Like, there is very, very little chance it's not coming out. So, you know, hanging a lantern on your faults and putting that, you know, in as good of a light as you possibly can is definitely the preferred method and the preferred way to go. You know, Gavin is doing this. We've got a lot of the other candidates who've done it as well. And you know, look, Gavin Newsom has been around for a long time. He knows that the oppo file on him is quite thick, and there's going to be all kinds of stuff. And he has done so much in California, and there is an opposite side to every single decision that he has made over the last 8 years as governor of California, or 7 years as governor of California. And somebody's going to come and take the opposite side of that. So you might as well tell your story and get it out there. And you just got to try to get past all of that stuff.
Tell your story, get it out. And we'll see whether or not anybody reads any more of these books, because sometimes they all just like pile up on the bookshelf.
But you know what? You take snippets, you take quotes, those go onto social media. And so it's, you know, stuff gets around, and you know, you make news. Like, they're, you know, the stuff about, we talked either last week or 2 weeks ago about the vetting process for Josh Shapiro to be Kamala Harris's vice president, you know, and that made a lot of news for a couple of days. So good.
That's
good for both of them.
That's right. All right. So that's the week in 2028. Good to talk to you, Matt. We'll talk to you next week.
Great to talk to you, Jamal.